Box a review podcast run by the team here at Mad Artists. I'm not starting over. Each week we will be breaking down a different production, whether it's a movie, TV show, book, whatever we're watching. And this week, John started us off with some weird energy. This week, continuing our Star Wars series, we watched Star Wars Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back. My name is Danielle, and here are the Mad Artists that I have with me to help break this down today.
Everyone, it's your resident Star Wars nerd, Samuel.
Whoever's
gonna... No Tyler today, by
the way.
Yeah,
no Tyler today.
So I get to talk more.
Everyone gets to talk more.
John. Yay. It's John. Hi, it's Russell.
What? That was the longest.
It's so clipped.
That was
like...
so weird. John, what is this energy you have today?
Just keep going. It's getting worse by the second.
It is. So, first impressions, we've all seen this before, but what was y'all's sort of, like, you know, experience with this? Like, whether you're watching it as a kid or, you know, where is this for you?
I mean, I'd seen it, you know, I watched the original trilogy several times as a kid because my dad loved it so much. I probably watched Jedi the most because it's my second favorite Star Wars film. But Empire I watched more than A New Hope. So I've probably seen Empire 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
At least. I mean, obviously it's very, very good.
The more that I answer this question that you start us off with, the more I realize how different my experience was growing up watching Star Wars. Because as with all the rest of the Star Wars movies, I have probably seen this movie upwards of 20 times.
Yeah.
And I don't...
To be fair, you're also like 5 years older.
That's true.
So that's true. What, four extra watches
per
year? And
you started watching
year.
Them a lot younger.
That's true. Like, I just feel like you ask this question, and I feel like I'm in such a weird minority every time, because it's like, yeah, oh my gosh, I love this movie. I've seen it like 3 times, and I'm like, wow.
Yeah, you're both older than us, except for Danielle, but you also started watching them far earlier.
Well, and I'm very similar to Russell. You know, the ones I watched the most as a kid were 5 and 6.
Yeah, you just watched them over and
I
over
definitely
and over.
Watched Return of the Jedi more. But I would go back to get, like, context before Return of the Jedi with Empire Strikes Back very often. So I probably haven't watched it upward of 20 times, but definitely upwards of 10, for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes it feel a little better.
Yeah.
I like 5 pretty okay. Definitely, again, with these kind of series, I love to watch them because it's a continuous plot. I love to watch them all in sequence, so I can't say I watched it more than the others. Because only if I'm going to watch the main trilogy, I'm going to watch it all once, twice, third times. I'm not going to sit there and, like, nitpick individual movies.
Yeah.
Like, when it comes to that kind of series, like, it's kind of like...
Watch it as a saga.
I'm going to watch it as a saga. I can't do it any other way.
I'm so not in that boat.
Same.
But I do like 5. 5 was out of the original 3. 5 is... definitely number 2. I just like 6 more because, I mean, I'm an action movie buff. I love action movies a lot. So this one had more action. 6 had a lot of action in it. 5 had a fair amount of action. It kept the plot going, but I don't know. 5 is not bad, but I enjoyed it pretty okay.
We all know why John really liked episode 6 more.
Princess Leia in the gold bikini.
I was going to say Jabba the Hutt.
But I mean, I can't say anything. 6 is my favorite of the original
trilogy. Yeah, 6
trilogy,
is my favorite
so.
For
yeah.
sure.
I love 6.
I'm so glad that we're on agreement about
yeah,
6.
Yeah, 6 is my favorite of the original trilogy, or at least it was when I was a kid for sure.
One of my favorite things is...
No, I mean, like until I watch it again, I won't know if that's changed, you know, because I haven't watched it in forever.
We will get into this far more when we do episode 6.
Yeah.
But there's this weird contingent of Star Wars fans that really dislikes episode 6.
Yeah, I know.
For whatever reason. And one of my favorite things is I was listening to the Star Wars podcast where they were interviewing Sam Witwer. And it was a smaller Star Wars podcast. And Sam Witwer is the actor who plays Maul in the Clone Wars. And the guy started, like, trash talking episode 6. Talking about, like, you know, oh yeah, the original trilogy is far superior. Except for episode 6. Episode 6 was so bad. And Sam Witwer just launched into this, like, 20-minute, like, essay on why that guy was absolutely wrong and why Episode 6 was the best Star Wars movie ever made, and it just made me so happy.
Well, I think for a lot of people, for some reason, they see Episode 6 as very childish, I don't know if it's because of, like, the Ewoks and stuff, and they were like, oh, the Ewoks are just little fuzzy bears, and it's just for kids or something like that. I know that's the complaint I have heard the most often, is that, oh, it's just so kiddie or something
that's
like that.
That's one aspect of the film that is slightly childish, and even with the Ewoks, like, they battle, and they're very, like... They are cute.
They're not like Care Bears.
they are cute, but they are... They're not even like the Gungans where they act childish. They very much act like...
Savages, honestly.
Just people.
Yeah.
They're just
a tribe.
Yeah.
They almost burn the main characters alive.
Yeah, they just look cute.
They aren't that childish.
But I can understand that argument, though, because I felt the same way about the Porgs in Episode 8. Those little, like,
I thought the whole Porgs thing
guys.
Was overblown. They were barely in the movie.
Yeah, I don't even honestly really remember them.
Yeah.
People just saw a cute animal and latched onto it, and they're like, oh, the Porgs. It's like, okay.
I also go by the How I Met Your Mother metric that Barney came up with, which is, like, if you're born before this time, you love the Ewoks because it reminds you of your teddy bears, and if you're born after this time, you hate the Ewoks and they're annoying. So that could be why some people think it's too childish, just because they just think it's
terrifying.
Like, you know, for kids, but I disagree. But yeah, this one
that's
came
all
out.
Episode 6 talk.
Yeah, that's all episode 6.
We just love episode 6. we're reviewing episode 6 instead of episode 5.
Well, this one came out in 1980. It was directed by Irvin Kershner and written by Lee Brackett and Lawrence Kasdan, and stars, as usual, Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker, Carrie Fisher as Princess Leia, and Harrison Ford as Han Solo. You can watch this with a Disney Plus subscription, or you can buy or rent it on Vudu, Apple TV, YouTube, Prime Video, or Google Play. And the IMDb summary for this says, after the Rebels are brutally overpowered by the Empire on the ice planet Hoth, Luke Skywalker begins Jedi training with Yoda while his friends are pursued across the galaxy by Darth Vader and bounty hunter Boba Fett.
So, Irvin Kershner was a pretty acclaimed filmmaker. He made indie films for a long time. He made smaller art house kind films and won a lot of awards for films such as Face in the Rain, Spies, The Return of a Man Called Horse, movies like that. What? Movies which I
that
have never seen
crazy.
In my life.
I've never heard of that.
A Man Called Horse?
Yeah.
Why would you want that man to return anyway?
If he's called Horse, get him out of here.
But he made this film, he made Empire. And he was pretty old when he made Empire, and the movies that he made after that were then blockbusters because of how well Empire was received.
Nice.
So he made the Bond film Never Say Never Again.
I've never seen that Bond movie.
Neither
have I.
I
haven't either.
I think that was a...
Timothy Dalton one?
No, because Timothy Dalton was in the 90s, and this was still in the 80s, so I think it would have been... why am I blanking on his name?
Sean
Connery, that's the one.
Yeah.
I think I've only seen one Bond movie, and it was in like 2010.
And then he also made RoboCop 2.
Ah.
So, yeah.
Ah.
Nice.
As far as our writers, this was fascinating to me. Lee Brackett was a science fiction novelist. She didn't really write...
I did not know she.
She didn't really write any screenplays. She wrote a couple of short films, but nothing like this. And George Lucas got her, I guess they were friends or they knew each other somehow, and he got her to write early drafts of Empire with him. She passed away in 1978, though, which was before the film actually went into production.
Oh. Right.
So she's credited as a screenwriter, and some of her ideas ended up in the script, but she didn't really write any of the dialogue or anything.
Right.
Who did, though, was Lawrence Kasdan. This was his first film. He is now one of the more acclaimed screenwriters in cinema history, probably. He wrote Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, he wrote
Return of the Jedi. He wrote The Big Chill, which I believe won him an Oscar. He wrote The Accidental Tourist, the 1994 Wyatt Earp film, Dreamcatcher, and then he wrote The Force Awakens and Solo.
Some good, some bad.
I really like Solo.
I'm praising you, my guy. No, that's...
That is Lawrence Kasdan.
Nice. Well,
in my opinion, he should have written the prequels, but we'll get there at a later date.
We will get there.
If the prequels had been directed by Steven Spielberg and written by George Lucas and Lawrence Kasdan, they would have been...
Perfect movies. Yeah.
Well, do y'all have any sort of overarching thoughts before we get into the plot summary here?
This film, for me... it's really good. I know it's generally this is the film that is seen as the best Star Wars film.
Yes.
That is what most people say. to me, it far and away is the darkest of all the Star Wars films. Every time I go back to watch this, I forget just how, like, kind of heavy this whole film is.
Yeah.
Which Return of the Jedi has some dark stuff in it, but it's also got some light stuff. You know, I mean, this is close to Revenge of the Sith. It's not quite there.
But it's close.
But it's closer to Revenge of the Sith in terms of how dark it is. And then, I don't know whether it was just because Brett was in the room last night and he was pointing stuff out. Brett's the technical director of Mad Artists. But just the technical production on this film is incredible.
Oh my gosh. The amount of work they put in.
It is so incredible.
The amount of work they put in.
I mean, he was geeking out over specifically like the puppetry and how like, you know, for 1980, it was really good puppetry.
There's also something to be said for the fact that you can tell a little bit that A New Hope, you know, when he originally made it, he had plans for sequels, but it wasn't like it was, he made it as a standalone movie. Mm-hmm. And you can feel going into Empire that he, like, episode 6 had to have been completely mapped out, essentially.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because 5 and 6 feel so closely linked.
They're
and
so,
so
closely linked.
Yeah.
Versus 4, like, almost
versus
feels
the,
like its
it
own
feels
animal.
Very separate from episode 4.
Yeah.
You jump into episode 5 and you're like, oh, this is different.
Well, it's like you said, different. You know, it's like you said in one of the past podcasts is that, you know, he's a gardener. He just lets it, like, kind of flow.
The story evolves, like, on its own.
Yeah.
And he kind of just, like, lets it do what it wants to do as opposed to trying to be like, no, I've had this outline for 16 years and I'm going to put it into work.
Well, right. And a lot of people say that, you know, oh, even in episode 6 he was making stuff up, like the whole Leia thing. But that's actually revealed in this movie, just not really revealed, with Yoda being like, no, there is another.
So
that had to have been planned.
It was only kind of planned, and I have a fun fact about it. If you want to know it now, I'll tell you about it.
Sure.
Let me find it really quick, because I thought it was interesting. So, this has probably a lot to do with the fact that Lee Brackett passed away before production started. So Lee Brackett's first draft of the screenplay contained the revelation of Luke's sister, her existence disclosed by the ghost of Anakin Skywalker. Referred to as Nellith Skywalker, Anakin explains that it was he, not Obi-Wan, who separated the twins at birth to protect them from Darth Vader, and that Nellith also underwent Jedi training in another part of the galaxy so she could join forces with Luke to defeat the Sith. This concept was dropped in the second draft of the screenplay, along with the appearance of Anakin Skywalker, and replaced with a scene of Obi-Wan and Yoda discussing how they must find another Jedi apprentice in anticipation of Luke's failure. This again changed in later drafts, resulting in the more ambiguous scene in the final version where Yoda assures Obi-Wan that there is another. So it had not really been fully mapped out.
Yeah.
So that actually might have been kind of an on-the-fly, like, you know, let's actually make her the person, you know? And that's like, you know.
Yeah, but there's that moment where Luke and Leia... Well,
yeah.
We'll talk about it later.
We'll talk about it.
We'll get to it. I don't want to get it. We always do this on the game.
We always,
excited.
Like,
I tend to think because of that moment with them at the end as well that it was planned out.
I because of that last moment at the end, that really sets the stage for me.
And, well, yeah. I think at a certain point during, like, you know, the writing, it was planned, but it definitely wasn't planned going into
the screen.
Right, going into.
Right, I just think that by the time, I don't think it was planned during the filming of episode 6, which is what a lot of people say.
Yeah, yeah,
a
yeah.
A lot of people say that was made up, like, during the filming of episode 6, and I just don't think that's true.
Right. Which, I mean, because of that, you know, fun fact not being super specific, there is still a chance that they didn't have it totally planned, and that they were just going to have her be another Force sensitive, and then they changed that, you know, and made her the sister later on. But, yeah, so I'm going to go ahead and jump in here. So 3 years after the destruction of the Death Star, the Imperial fleet, led by Darth Vader, dispatches probe droids across the galaxy to locate Princess Leia's Rebel Alliance. One probe locates the base on the ice planet Hoth. While investigating the probe, a Wampa captures Luke Skywalker, but he escapes using the Force to retrieve his lightsaber and wound the beast. Before succumbing to hypothermia, the Force spirit of Luke's deceased mentor, Obi-Wan Kenobi, instructs him to go to the swamp planet Dagobah. To train...
Or Dagobah, whatever you want.
I mean, because George Lucas is fine with that. Because people kept saying Han this whole movie, and I was like, oh my god.
Well, that's a bit... I noticed it. So Billy Dee always said it Han.
Yeah.
And after he showed up and started saying Han, other characters started pronouncing it Han, which I'd never noticed before. It's like, and I think part of... I wonder if part of that is because, and this, I know this is not probably realistic at all, but I like to think that part of it is because, you know, Han had been very open about the fact that he knew Lando before. Mm-hmm. And so, like, all these characters are meeting Lando, and Lando's like, well, how you doing, Han? And the other, I like to think that the other characters are like, have we been mispronouncing his name?
But the main characters still call him Han. Yeah. So weird.
That would be, like, the worst thing ever, that you've been traveling with this person, and then you find out it's wrong.
Leia calls him Han at one point. After Lando's introduced, Leia calls him Han at one point.
I know, it was weirding me out.
Yep.
That's why, like, because it wasn't just Lando. Yeah. Like, other characters were calling him
Han.
But
they only did it after Lando showed up.
Yeah, only after that.
Which is why that's my headcanon, is that all these characters, Leia and C-3PO and all, are like, oh,
freaking Lando.
3PO was cracking me up in this movie specifically.
I think this is 3PO's best movie.
I think so.
He really gets on my nerves sometimes. I think this is 3PO's best movie.
Well, because they let him still be, like, you know, an annoying little guy, but in a very funny way where he's still, like, where he kind of needed the rest of the group, and he's kind of just stumbling around. Yeah. Like, I guess I'm just kind of like, I wasn't planning on this, but I'm here with y'all. And, like, no, I was really enjoying all of his little, like, side comments during battles and stuff.
He's very funny.
It was killing me. But yeah, so he's instructed to go to Dagobah to train as a Jedi Knight under a Jedi Master named Yoda. Han Solo discovers Luke and insulates him against the weather inside his deceased, is it Tauntaun Mount?
Tauntaun
Mount, until they are rescued the next morning. Alerted to the rebels' location, the Empire launches a large-scale attack using AT-AT walkers to capture the base, forcing the rebels to evacuate. Han and Leia escape with 3PO and Chewbacca aboard the Millennium Falcon, but the ship's hyperdrive malfunctions. Every time one of the guys goes, "It's not my fault!" It was cracking me up. Oh, it's so good. They hid in an asteroid field where Han and Leia grow closer amidst the tensions. Vader summons... Oh my gosh, no. Vader summons several bounty hunters, including Boba Fett, to locate the Falcon. Evading the Imperial...
Voiced over by Tim Morrison.
Mm-hmm. Well, although that, you know, we don't really get to know that until, you know, later on, but... Like, we know it in the credits, but, like, we don't really, you know, see his face or anything.
No. Well, because he wasn't in the suit.
Yeah.
Because this was far before he had anything to do with Star Wars. Actually, the original actor who was in the suit for Boba Fett, who really inspired Tim's performance in a lot of ways in the prequels and in Boba Fett and all, just because of his like, stance and all, was so cool. Forgetting his name, I'm gonna look it up in a second, but he passed away this last year. What was his name?
The, like, actual...
The guy who was in the Boba
Fett. Yeah, the guy who was in the suit.
Because the guy who continued to be Boba Fett did voice him.
Jeremy Bullock.
Correct?
Jeremy Bullock. Say what?
Okay, maybe I'm just incorrect, but was the guy who voiced Boba Fett in this movie the guy that plays Boba Fett from here on?
Yeah, so who originally voiced him, I believe, was Jeremy Bullock. I think that he was both in the suit and provided the voice for Boba Fett in the original. And then when they did, when they established in the prequels that Boba Fett was a clone of Jango, then in the, like, I think the 2003 special edition release of Return of the Jedi, they went over and dubbed Tim's voice back over his lines.
Yeah.
So did they dub this movie?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's what we just saw.
Okay, that's what I thought, because it sounded so much like
that
him.
Was Tim. That was Tim's voice dubbed over, but he wasn't originally in this film.
Okay, gotcha.
He was definitely wasn't.
I thought I was just crazy for a second.
No, he was like
that
kid.
Was definitely
he was like
him.
A kid when this came out.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But yeah, Jeremy Bullock, the original actor in the suit, and I believe he also voiced him. He passed away this last year.
While evading the Imperial fleet, Han's group travels to the floating cloud city on planet Bespin. Which, the way they evade the Imperial fleet, is a serious big brain play.
Oh, so the trash awesome. Compactor?
Yeah, the fact cool. that they, like, just turn the ship off, essentially, or, like, you know, turn off all the engines and just yeah. stay on the Star Destroyer, and then when they toss out trash, they just pretend to be well, trash.
And the scene in the cave on the asteroid with the Minox is just so cool.
It's so satisfying.
Everything, like, that...
The worm coming out and biting after yeah. the ship.
The oh. middle act would have been very easy to mess up, with them just, you know, running away, and they're only on the Falcon, and it's, you know, kind of... You know, it would be very easy to make that very boring, but they did such a good job with it.
They did a really good job yeah. of making it, you know, okay, relationships are growing closer, right. and there's a lot of comedy, and Chewbacca's really stressed, and yeah. like, poor Chewbacca in this movie. I felt so bad for him the whole time, because he's so stressed about everything going wrong, and then he's trying to put 3PO together, and 3PO's just, like, mad because he's putting him together wrong, and he's just, like, so unbelievably stressed and upset.
Just like, leave me alone, I'm trying to work!
I felt so bad for him, like, the whole time, and Sam Marie was basically, like, my inner thoughts, because yeah. she would always just be like, oh, like, every time he was upset, it was so sad to watch, especially when, like, he's getting frozen and Chewbacca's, like, trying to fight him off, and Han's just like, just stop.
Yeah, don't do it, buddy.
You're like, don't really do it. Upset, Danielle.
I was very, like, I was upset.
Well, and why she was upset was because of his reaction there versus his reaction
I know!
In the sequels.
I started, I leaned over to Samuel's ear and I was whisper ranting about how, like, okay, so he's this upset about Han maybe not even dying, just getting frozen in the original trilogy, but then in the sequels, Leia just ignores Chewbacca and goes up to Rey after Han dies yeah. and is just like, and goes up to him. I'm like, this is not yeah. correct.
Han dies and Leia runs up to Rey like, I'm so sorry. And Chewie's just
Chewie's
standing
right there. I'm like, this is
why
incorrect.
Would Leia give a crap about Rey?
No,
right
she would go to Chewbacca because she's seen how he is, how attached he is to Han. No way. Incorrect again. But that, I'll talk more about
it's
it
so cursed.
When we get to the sequels.
It's so cursed.
But it got me last night when we were watching it. I started, like, hissing into Samuel's ear about it, how mad I was.
I hate those movies.
I was just so angry. But yeah, so they escape. They go to the Cloud City, which is governed by his old friend, Lando Calrissian. Fett tracks them to the city, and Vader forces Lando to surrender the group to the Empire, knowing Luke will come to their aid. That I had forgotten happens, so when they opened yeah. the door and Vader was there, I was like, I was genuinely like, oh, whoa!
And
like,
Vader just stops the blaster.
Han starts firing.
He just catches the bullets. Yeah. He's like, whatever.
He's just like, cute. Like, catches it and just takes the,
like,
blaster.
You should have a seat.
Yeah, go ahead and take a seat. We're gonna talk for a minute.
Also, can we talk about the absolute, like, okay, what Han did with escaping with the garbage was a big brain move,
mm-hmm.
but what Boba Fett did in response
yep.
was the power play of
yep.
the movie, where he recognized that was his plan and also went out with the garbage.
Yep.
And you see the Falcon drive away and the Slave One is right behind it, and you're mm-hmm. just like, this is why his legend is so strong, is because of little things like
Han
that.
Han had a really, really big brain play. Boba Fett just had a bigger brain.
Yes, Boba Fett just knew. I don't know how he knew, but he knew.
He was
He's
like,
Boba. He's
yeah.
the best bounty hunter in the galaxy.
Well, except for that one legend. Guy that you talked
Everybody
about.
Everybody go watch Book of Boba Fett.
Well, oh gosh, I gotta find it. Okay. Meanwhile, Luke travels with R2-D2 and his X-Wing fighter to Dagobah, where he crash lands. He meets Yoda, a diminutive creature who reluctantly accepts him as his Jedi apprentice.
That first scene with Yoda is so brilliant.
It's I hilarious. Love it.
It's so brilliant.
Hilarious.
And I had never thought of it before last night when we were watching it, though, the fact that him and R2 know each other.
Yes!
So when they're just beating up on each other, it's like... It's like they're acting in a play or something.
They're just,
like,
messing around, like...
Old friends, like, they're, like, seeing each other again for the first time in, like, yeah. 20 years.
And R2 just, comes out and tries yeah. to snatch the thing from him, and they're just like... Yoda's smacking him with a stick! No, it reminded me... I told Samuel this. It reminded me very much of the Rafiki scene in The Lion King,
yes,
like, where he shows up
so.
Very much, and he's just bopping around, but he's this wise man, and he's like, follow me into the woods! It was very much like that for
I'm
me.
Like, what the heck?
Well, and, you know, it's all about testing Luke's patience.
Yeah.
And Luke's face when he realizes that that's Master Yoda, he's like, ooh.
He's like, I have not been doing well.
I've embarrassed myself profoundly.
it kind of reminds me of like when you show up for a job interview and you think that you're just talking to like one of the employees, yeah, and it turns out that's the person you're interviewing, yes, with, and you're just like, ooh, or like you're talking to someone, or you're at an audition and you think you're talking to another actor, and then it turns out they're like the stage manager, yeah, or something, and they like sit behind the table and you're like, did I? Oh God. Like,
what did I say? I don't even remember.
I hope I didn't say anything weird. But yeah, so he accepts him as his apprentice after conferring with Obi-Wan's spirit. Yoda trains Luke to master the light side of the Force and resist the negative emotions that will seduce him to the dark side, as they did Vader. However, Luke struggles to control his anger and impulsiveness and fails to comprehend the nature and power of the Force until he witnesses Yoda use it to telekinetically lift the X-Wing effortlessly from the swamp.
I don't believe it. That is why you fail.
I love that line. That was really good.
And that scene where Luke goes into the cave and like experiences, you know, like
the whole like Vader, yeah, thing. Yeah. Well, yeah.
That like mirage. And then he like, you know, cuts open like Vader's face
mask.
And
it's of course the setup for the reveal.
For the, yeah, fact that, you know, it is him in, you know, just a roundabout way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sneaky.
But
snack.
I can imagine how like, you know, I mean, obviously I was so young when I watched these movies. I don't remember what that reveal was like.
Yeah.
I can only imagine if someone was watching it and saw, like, you know, oh, it's Luke's face inside the mask. Like, oh, it's just because, you know, he's getting, like, the dark side's easier, you, yeah, know,
it's
whatever.
Like the embodiment of his own evil.
Right, and it isn't until that scene that you're like, oh, there's a lot more to what's going on here. No, I loved all of that. The sequence with Vader was just so cool.
Incredible.
But yeah, so Luke experiences a premonition of Han and Leia in pain, and despite Obi-Wan's and Yoda's protestations, abandons his training to rescue them. Although Obi-Wan believes Luke is their only hope, Yoda asserts that there is another.
Okay, so this leads into an interesting thing with the... with this movie is more about listening to and respecting the wiser figures, your elders, as it may be.
Mm-hmm.
Because Luke is right to want to go help his friends. And, you know, Yoda and Obi-Wan try and warn him against it. At the end of the day, nothing that Luke does actually helps.
He doesn't make a difference.
Right.
No.
It
Lando and all of them escaped without him.
Yeah. Right.
They actually had to go back to get Luke.
Yeah.
That being said, it sets up Luke to grow.
Yeah.
Because if he hadn't gone, he wouldn't have discovered that Vader was his father.
And he might have been blindsided by that at a very bad moment.
At a very bad moment. Mm-hmm. And he wouldn't have then tried to turn Vader to the light.
Yeah.
So, it's, you know, it's meant to be this whole, oh, you know, he's you know, irrational and he moves too fast and he's emotional and all this stuff. And it doesn't turn out well for him. But I tend to think that what he did was the right thing.
Yeah.
In terms of, he didn't go out of a... he used his attachment. He followed his attachments.
Yeah.
And that's
which
what
is
the,
not the Jedi way.
Well, but it should be.
Right.
That's,
yeah,
what the Jedi keep messing up on.
Yeah.
That's what they messed up on with Anakin. That's what, you know, they always mess up on, is they're so strict about, you know, if your friend, you know, I think Yoda even says, you know, if they die, so be it.
Yeah, so be it.
And that's not how the Jedi way should be.
Yeah.
Yeah,
which then sets up the next movie perfectly with Yoda and Obi-Wan being like, you know, you have to kill Vader. You have to kill Vader. And Luke just being like, no. No, I'm not going to.
It's not going to happen. Listen, bro, not for nothing. Yeah, I expressed a lot of distaste with the little bit of prequels about Yoda. And, you know, Yoda works so much better in this environment.
Yeah.
I just think, here's the thing. I think you're right, but I think that's intentional.
Yeah.
I don't think it's unintentional in any way.
Exactly.
I think Yoda in the prequels is supposed to represent the failings of the Jedi.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's unintentional that he is, you watch him in the prequels sometimes and you're like, Yoda, like, what are you, like, what?
Yeah. Well, characters making mistakes and failing is always interesting.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a character having an awesome success is really only great if they have also had a lot of failure.
Yeah.
Because then it feels like something that we can relate to, because everyone makes mistakes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I tend to agree that he makes, you know, he makes more sense in this trilogy. Yeah. But, you know, like he said, I think that's kind of purposeful.
Yeah, which is good. Seeing Yoda in his original environment where he, like, first, like, showed up was like a breath of fresh air.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, thank goodness.
Yeah, okay, I gotta find it. Yeah, so Leia confesses her love for Han before Vader freezes him in carbonite to test if the process will safely imprison Luke.
And the ad-lib of all ad-libs.
Apparently it was pitched before they started shooting that take. So it wasn't ad-libbed in the moment.
Right, but
it was like an alternate. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it was like...
Because they kept filming, because originally it was I love you, I love you too. And they kept filming it, and they kept filming it.
Couldn't get it to feel right.
And
that actually wasn't the line that Harrison was upset with, according to IMDb. It was a different line.
That's the story I've heard told many times, is that...
Hang on a second.
Hold on.
It was, I love you, I love you too, and they kept filming it, and it was just not working. And so then they decided to go with I love you, I know.
So, the I love you too was not... It might have been a thing, but it was not the thing that would, like, caused Harrison Ford to choose something else. I gotta find it, because I didn't actually put it in. Okay, here it is. So apparently, when Han Solo is about to be frozen, Princess Leia says, I love you. In the original script, Han was supposed to say, just remember that, Leia, because I'll be back. But at the time of filming, Harrison Ford wasn't entirely certain he did want to come back for a third movie. So there's a recurring legend that this line, I know, was ad-libbed. However, in Alan Arnold's book, Once Upon a Galaxy, A Journal of the Making of The Empire Strikes Back, includes a transcription of the discussion between Ford and the director in which Ford suggested the line as an alternate.
So I think that was probably is that they changed it to I love you too because they weren't sure if he would be coming back. And then it wasn't working. So then they decided to go with I know.
Yeah.
That is an awkward line.
Yeah.
Just remember that, Leia, because I'll be back as he's going down.
It is a really awkward that, line. Because I'll be back. Get like blasted.
Harrison hated these films so much.
Yeah.
That sucks.
He essentially just did them for Carrie Fisher.
Like, well, and Mark Hamill. Like,
and Mark Hamill.
He loved the, you know, he loved George, he loved Mark, he loved Carrie.
It was just the story in the movies.
He was
dumb.
He has said several times that his best scene partner ever was Peter Mayhew as Chewbacca. So, like, he really liked his fellow actors. He just hated the films.
Yeah. I think he probably just, like, because he's Harrison Ford, thought they were just too childish.
I watched a video that was so funny that was Harrison Ford breaking down his career. And he was talking about Star Wars, and he's like, yeah, did Star Wars. It was, you know, it was big. And then they're like, what about Indiana Jones? He was like, oh, Indiana Jones, let's talk about this. And, like, he, like, just, like, his face, like, lit up, and he just started going on and on about Indiana Jones. And I was like, yep, you can tell what he liked and what he didn't like.
Well, Han survives and is given to Boba Fett, who intends to collect his bounty from Jabba the Hutt. Lando frees Leia and Chewbacca, but they are too late to stop Boba Fett's escape. The group fights its way back to the Falcon and flees the city. Luke arrives and engages Vader in a lightsaber duel over the city's central air shaft.
Yes.
Which that is compared to the Episode 4 lightsaber fight, this is a really good lightsaber fight.
Well, and a big part of that is they got Bob Anderson, who is one of the most renowned stunt coordinators of all time, to come in for this film. He also passed away recently.
Mm.
Well, not recently, 2012. He choreographed such films as the Highlander movies, The Princess Bride, The Zorro films,
nice.
The Lord of the Rings films, and the Pirates of the Caribbean films.
Come on.
Wow.
Come on.
Wow. That guy had a crazy resume.
That's amazing.
I don't think y'all know who this is, but anybody listening who might. He originally taught Errol Flynn, who was the first big movie star, like, ever. Like, the first, like, action hero movie star. He taught Errol Flynn how to sword fight. He taught Viggo Mortensen. He was very open about the fact that Viggo Mortensen was the best sword fighter actor he'd ever met.
That's so cool.
Yeah, he was an incredible guy, and he was in the suit playing Vader for the sword fights.
That is the role that Tyler wants to have in life.
He
wants to be the fight choreographer for these
for
big
everything.
Movies. Yeah,
for absolutely. Everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He did Three Musketeers.
Oh, good lord. Incredible. He did
incredible
everything.
Man. Unbelievable.
That's so cool.
He did some of the he did some stunts for Bond films.
Yeah, I mean, I remember some sword fights from Bond that like
that were yeah, really
that
awesome.
Just are, that are, have no business being there. Like, wait, isn't this he could sword fight too? Come on.
Oh, Lord. Well, they can't stop Fett's escape. He's in the lightsaber fight. Vader overwhelms Luke, severing his right hand and separating him from his saber.
Sorry. He also did the fencing for the Parent Trap.
LOL.
That's so random.
That's so random. I mean, honestly, the fencing was decent considering it was supposed to be like children fencing. It really wasn't that bad, so that's not too surprising. Yeah, I actually, that's the one I know the best out of all the things you named, because I've watched that movie way too many times. It's my sister's favorite movie, so we watch it all the time growing up.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, so he urges Luke to embrace the power of the dark side and help him destroy his master, the Emperor, so they may rule the galaxy together.
As father and son.
Mm-hmm.
The twist, the movie twist of all movie twists. Probably, so it's probably the most shocking movie twist of all time for when it came out.
It's just such a big surprise. Like, yeah. When you see it for the first
time. It's unfortunate to me that it's became so well known.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that when by the time I saw these films, I knew it going in. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody, anybody who sees the films now knows that Vader is his father.
Yeah.
Because one of the most famous lines of all time is, no, I am your father.
Which everybody messes up.
Everyone says, Luke, I am your father.
It's one of the Mandela effect things where everybody thinks the line is, Luke, I am your father, and he never says that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's trying to convince him to rule the galaxy with him, and Luke refuses, citing Obi-Wan's claim that Vader killed his father, prompting Vader to reveal that he is Luke's father. Desperate, Luke drops into the air shaft and is ejected beneath the floating city, latching onto an antenna.
That's some Anakin crap.
That is.
That's the first thing I said last night, is if you look at the scene in episode 2, when Anakin is just like, if you'll excuse me, and jumps out of the speeder when they're chasing the bounty hunter through Coruscant, then in this exact scene when Luke is just like, looks down, he's like, well,
and then jumps down. And I love, you can see Vader like looking at him like, huh.
Yep. That's
that
mine.
Tracks.
That's my boy.
That's my boy.
That's why I'm here.
Oh my gosh, no. He reaches out through the Force to let Leia and to Leia, and Falcon returns to rescue him. TIE fighters pursue the group, which is almost captured by Vader's Star Destroyer, until R2-D2 reactivates the Falcon's hyperdrive, allowing them to escape.
Something I've never noticed here is that Leia kisses Luke again.
Yeah, she does.
At this point. Yep. I'd never noticed that before.
It's not like a big moment.
Yeah, she just gives him a peck on the lips when after she like helps him like into the like little med like hospital bed thing.
Yeah, right.
And then before she walks away, she just gives him a quick peck on the lips, and I was like,
wait.
I mean, they still don't know yet that they're brother and sister. So, like, you know.
She's also, like, spoilers. With
if this is a spoiler for people at this point, I can't help them. Like,
we also said it early in the episode, too.
We said it really early on. Well, aboard the Rebel fleet, a robotic, is it prosthesis? Replaces Luke's hand. He, Leia, 3PO, and R2-D2 observe as Lando and Chewbacca depart on the Falcon to find Han.
Setting up the best of the original trilogy.
And that is The Empire Strikes Back.
So freaking awesome.
Darth Vader has caused the most amount of chain in command changes ever.
He kills so many men in this movie.
He force chokes 3 of his commanding officers as an acceptance of an apology.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Apology accepted.
That's why when they all shoot out with their hyperdrive fixed and they're like jumping into hyperspace, he's just looking. And the guy standing back there that just told him, yes, we deactivated it, they can't, you know, really escape, he sees them go, and everyone, I swear, everyone's blood runs cold. Because Vader just slowly turns around and walks out of the room, and they're all just like,
and
oh,
you
God.
Know, at the end of the day, it's Vader's fault. He shouldn't have taught R2 that well.
Yeah.
He shouldn't have.
It was his boy that that fixed it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what title would work better than Empire Strikes Back for this movie?
Whoa, hang on. I can find what it was. Let's think.
I need to write a list of the ones we've already used so I don't reuse them. Because I find myself like always thinking to reuse some.
So I was sent a video, I think Tyler sent it to me, where a guy essentially goes through and
reassigns all of them. I pulled this whole idea from. And that's what I'm kind of looking at.
I can't remember
now.
What he said for this one, but I remember that he had all of them mixed up and how they like worked better for different
So
movies.
What he said for this one was The Force Awakens.
That was what I was going to
say.
Yeah,
I was just saying.
I was going to say The Force Awakens.
I was thinking Force Awakens.
I was like, "Oh, I don't know if like I thought we'd use that one already because that one is so
No, I don't think we have. And even if we have, it just works objectively better for this one because you see so much more of the force happening in this movie than you saw in episode four.
It's the Force Awakening in Luke.
Yeah. Right. As well as, like, a little bit in Leia, too. Because, like, she isn't a Jedi, but she is, like, you know, force sensitive and can use, you know, the force as well.
Like, other than the brief force choke you get from, like, in episode four, this is, like, the most grandiose display of the force powers.
Far and away.
Yeah.
Even the stuff that we accept is so commonplace, like Vader throwing all the stuff at Luke, that had never been shown before in a Star Wars movie. Nope.
Yeah.
Even Luke, like, pulling the lightsaber to himself.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. It's
the grab.
We see it as so commonplace, but it had never happened before.
Yeah.
So cool.
Well, I went on Amazon. The general consensus is really good. 88% rated it 5 stars. Uh-huh. Do y'all want the positive or the negative first?
Positive first, because I'm more interested in negative.
Okay.
I don't know what the... whatever.
I mean, the negative is interesting. We'll get there.
Okay.
So, this is from Andy Waitstill, and this is from 2016, and he titles it, "Don't Hate the Movie, Enjoy the Thrill." Irrespective of what format or region or whatever technical issue you may have with this edition, the fact remains that this is a great film, expertly scripted from start to end. This is the Star Wars epic at its very best, building on ages of parables of man's insecurity, greed, and arrogance. The acting is crisp, the action pulsating, and the intent quite clear. This is not a movie that will end well for your heroes. The Empire strikes back with a deadly psychological weapon that, if you are willing, will haunt you. If you are amongst the very few who have never seen this film, I envy you. The first reaction is the one that really resounds. Having seen this so much, the escapism is gone, but there is still the sheer delight in seeing a work so exquisitely done. That, regardless of the peevish tech issues, is worth a great deal more than the price. 5 stars.
Oh, yeah.
And this is the negative one from just S, and I don't know how to say this last name, Zanov. This is from last year, and it's titled... Very outdated and sexist movie.
What?
Here we go.
Oh, boy. Okay.
I remember the thrill of lining up at the theater to watch The Empire Strikes Back when it originally came out. I was a teenager then. I recently watched the movie again. OMG, I couldn't believe how bad the movie actually was. There are movies that hold the test of time, but not this one. And I'm not talking about the visual effects. They are still pretty good. But the shallow, aimless plot, the terrible acting, and the sexism in the movie are really hard to swallow. I watched the movie with our neighbor's kids, and I felt extremely uncomfortable as an adult to push this 80s sexist culture to the young kids. What? While the movie may offer some sentimental value to those of us who remember watching it as teenagers, it is definitely not a good movie to show to kids today. If you care what they learn and what values they adopt, that is, smiley face, 2 stars.
Oh my gosh.
How is it sexist?
I have no clue.
You get to watch Leia reject Han like
you watch Leia.
8 different times.
Well, I mean, then she does, like, you know, because she is actually into him. But
that's because their chemistry is incredible.
Yeah, that's because they have the whole, like, the whole love-hate chemistry, you know?
Han has, you know, a little bit of, like, you know, he's not the most stand-up guy, but, like, he doesn't say anything overtly sexist.
No, and even when he's, like, you know, leaning in and doing all that, and she's kind of like, no, I'm not into you, it's very clear that she actually is.
Yeah.
Because she never tries to push him away. She never is, like, she never slaps him or says anything. It's like, as soon as he kisses her, she's like, yeah, okay. That's what I wanted.
She's like, oh my gosh, Han Solo.
She's like, oh, it finally happened. Here we go.
The only thing Han really prods at is her social class.
Well, that's not the only thing you're prodded at.
Yeah, yeah.
You're cursed.
What was it? You don't have to call me, stop calling me that. Okay, Leia.
and she's just like... Because the thing is, it's also not like, you know, it's not sexist where she can't do anything.
Yeah.
She does a lot of things. And, like, she's awesome. and she like
rebellion.
And she's actively sitting there saying, "I don't think this is gonna work." And he's like, "It's gonna work." And then it doesn't work, and she just looks at him, and he's just like, "It's not my fault." And she's like, "Uh huh." Like,
this isn't how the guys can do everything. At the end of the movie, Lando's like, "We gotta go, we gotta go," and Leia's like, "No, turn around, we are going."
Yeah,
back.
Leia's like, "We're going back to get Luke. No. I don't care. Like, go back."
This movie is not sexist.
No, I think. I think they just completely misread everything that happened.
All the people, I've said it before on the podcast, all the people who call George Lucas sexist, I don't know what to do.
Because like, Leia is so awesome.
He creates some of the strongest female leads, like, in movie history. Like, Padme and Leia, even if you want to go to Clone Wars, Ahsoka and Asajj Ventress. Like, he creates some of the best female characters ever. So, like, I don't know how you want to call this man sexist.
Yeah, I don't know.
Whatever.
I disagree. And I'm someone who's very, like, you know, feminist and everything. But, like, even I read that review and was like, you're just wrong, though.
Yeah,
like,
you're reaching.
You're reaching a little bit, my guy.
Looking in the wrong places.
So what do y'all think this is rated critically on Rotten Tomatoes out of 100?
It's got to be insane.
I know it's really good. I know it's the best one on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, the best out of the Star Wars movies.
I'm gonna let y'all guess first because I know about what it is. I know within a couple of points of where it is.
I'm gonna throw out a comfortable 95.
Okay.
You
can share.
You can join him if you want.
Don't join me.
96.
Okay. You. Samuel?
I believe it's 94, but I'm not.
That's it.
Yeah,
it is 94. Okay. It's exactly 94.
That was closer.
Here, sorry. I have to get to what I'm doing.
If you got one point below me, you would have gotten it with Samuel.
You're just trying to upset people today. What's going on?
The spice.
And now for the audience score, also out of 100.
I don't know this.
I don't know. I think like I kind of could go either way.
I'm gonna guess it's a little bit higher. I'm gonna guess 96.
Okay.
People love this movie.
I mean, you're right. People do. I'm gonna stick with 95.
Okay.
92.
Samuel didn't get it exactly, but you're still the closest. It is a 97.
Gosh.
Really high. Really high.
That is up there.
Yeah.
Man.
And IMDb out of 10.
I think it's like a. I'm going to guess 9.1.
Okay.
I was going to say 9.1. 9.2.
Okay.
9.3.
Mm. Samuel, you're closest, but it's lower than y'all think. It's an 8.7. Yeah.
Not exactly what I expected.
Well, I mean, again, remember, it's the whole, you know, this is a fantastic movie, 8 out of 10.
Yeah, yeah. Because on IMDb, whereas on Rotten Tomatoes, it's like it's, positive it, to negative.
Yeah.
So this one's a little bit different, but it is exactly one decimal point higher than A New Hope, because A New Hope was 8.6.
Yeah.
So the budget for this movie was, it started at about 18 million, you know, back then, and then they ended up having to do like an extra 10 million for like, just issues with production and things getting extended and having to find new places to film and things like that. Today, that would be about 75 million, I believe.
That's,
the box office.
I don't think that's that much by today's standards.
Not by today's
million?
Standards.
In today's money, that's not that much. For a film like this.
The box office made, back then, over $500 million. Today, it would have been $1.5 billion that it made.
Ooh. I mean, that's up there. That's like with the first Avengers.
And because George Lucas funded this entire movie himself and didn't use a big studio, he raked in like all of that.
Yeah.
And, but then he did, this was a fun fact I didn't write down, because of how well and the movie did and how happy he was with it, he gave out a total of like $5 million in bonuses to like all of his cast and crew and everyone that like had helped out.
Very cool. That's
yeah.
Awesome.
George Lucas treated his crew very, very well. He worked them like long hours and stuff, but everybody in general who worked for George Lucas like
had
nothing
to say.
But good things to say.
Yeah, even awesome. Even with like even with stuff, you know, where actors were put in like uncomfortable situations, as far as I know, you know, it wasn't like they were forced.
I mean, all his actors loved him. Mark Hamill, Harrison Ford, even Carrie Fisher would give him a lot of crap about stuff because that's who she is.
Yeah.
She was very open about how much she loved George Lucas.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Well, I got some fun facts here. So the shots where Luke uses his Jedi powers to retrieve his lightsaber from a distance were achieved by having him throw the saber and then running it in reverse back into his hand. Mark Hamill had to bang his head 16 times on the ceiling of Yoda's hut before director Irvin Kershner was satisfied with the scene.
Oh, gosh.
It was so many times. When shooting on location in, I'm not sure how to say this city, it's either Fence or Fincy, Norway, a fierce snowstorm hit the hotel where the cast and crew were staying. This would have normally halted filming, but director Irvin Kershner thought these weather conditions were an excellent opportunity to film the scene where Luke wanders through the snow after escaping the Wampa Cave. He did this by sending Mark Hamill outside into the cold while he and the cameraman stayed and filmed inside the hotel's front hall.
So awesome.
He's just like, you have fun out there, and they're filming from inside, nice and toasty warm, and he's just like struggling through the snow.
It's not fair. Being overworked.
Empire Online lists this movie as, they're like a critique website. They list this movie as the second greatest film of all time.
Wow. That's crazy.
I mean, it is unbelievable.
It's not even that I like, you know, am viscerally like disagreeing with it. I don't know that I absolutely agree with it, but like it is a great movie.
I think 6 is better.
You think what?
6 is better.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not disagreeing with that. George Lucas was so impressed by Frank Oz's performance as Yoda that he spent thousands of dollars on an advertising campaign to try and get him an Oscar nomination for Best Actor in a Supporting Role. Lucas's campaign ultimately failed because it was felt that a puppeteer wasn't an actor. Lucas felt this wasn't fair to Oz, who honestly didn't care.
Frank Oz is probably rolling in it, so I don't think he cares that much about stuff like that.
He's like, ah, whatever.
He's like, this is Piggy.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
You know, that was something I didn't write down. Apparently, whenever Luke was sort of like having trouble, I guess, being jovial with like the Yoda puppet, Frank Oz brought in Miss Piggy to like get his spirits in like a better place. Yeah. And then he would go back to Yoda.
I heard that Henson helped out on this too. I'm not sure if that's
Henson
true.
Was supposed to be Yoda originally.
Okay.
But he was busy with one of the Muppet movies at the time, and so he recommended Frank Oz, and that's how he got involved.
That's so cool.
During the filming of the Battle of Hoth, the Echo Base troops were actually Norwegian mountain rescue skiers. In exchange for participation in this movie, Lucasfilm made a donation to the Norwegian Red Cross.
Nice.
Carrie Fisher, so this is where she and Natalie Portman are very similar. Carrie Fisher stood on a box for many of her scenes with Harrison Ford in order to make up for the height difference and have her appear in frame with him because she is 5'1 and Harrison Ford is 6 feet.
You know, I didn't notice until one of the scenes in Cloud City when you see them both from, like, that you see full body shots
like
of both
far
of them. And she is really short.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't noticed it before.
Yeah. Wow. So similar to how Natalie Portman in most of her movies had to stand on a box, apparently so did Carrie Fisher.
That's awesome.
In the DVD commentary, Carrie Fisher relates that during some of the London filming, she stayed at a house rented from Eric Idle. Idle and the Pythons were filming Life of Brian at the time. One evening, Idle had a small party, including Harrison Ford and the Rolling Stones, and served a potent liquor, which the Pythons had been distributing to extras on their movie to help boost morale, that he referred to as Tunisian table cleaner. They stayed up most of the night... They stayed up most of the night drinking and having fun. The first scenes shot the next day were the arrival at Cloud City, which she says helps explain why she and Ford were so happy in those scenes. Idle is said to be very pleased that he had a small hand in how the finished movie turned out.
So happy because they were blasted.
They were blasted.
That's so awesome. I love it so much.
So
the 80s were a different time.
They were a very different time.
Very different time.
Doing cocaine and chugging Tunisian table cleaner right before a scene.
Tunisian table cleaner?
So I've got two facts about the asteroid scene. So originally in the scene, one of the asteroids was actually a shoe. The rumor is that George Lucas asked the visual effects people to redo the scene so many times that they got annoyed and one of them threw in their shoe. Later remastered versions have corrected this. And another of the asteroids is actually a potato. It appears just as the Millennium Falcon first enters the field. Two asteroids travel from the top left to the bottom right corner of the screen. Just after the second asteroid leaves the screen, a third one appears in the top left corner. This is the potato. There is no explanation for it. It's just a potato.
There's a potato in there.
There's just a potato.
I love it.
Like, that's the end, is it just says, this is the potato. no further explanation as to why it's there. It just says it. So now we get to recast. Who do we think we would play if we were recast?
Danielle is so Leia.
Y'all were saying it last night, and you're completely right.
Danielle,
I agree.
Danielle just is Leia.
You're almost the same height.
She's only 2 inches taller than me.
Like, you're Leia.
And that is, like, the energy I give is very much that energy.
Yeah, I'm going to need some Leia cosplays from you now.
I mean, I've told you I'm happy to do it.
Oh, boy.
All right. I think Samuel. You're hard for this, Samuel.
You have big Luke energy.
In the original trilogy.
Yeah.
You've been hard to cast.
Yeah.
It's tough because there isn't, like, a perfect character that, like, I feel like really, like, embodies you, like, that I see.
See, I see it with Luke a good amount.
I could pull off Luke. I don't think it's as good a fit. I know Tyler said he thinks it's a better fit than Anakin. I feel like Anakin's a better fit.
I think Anakin's a better fit, but you could absolutely do Luke.
Yeah.
I guess that's fine. I'll hop in the suit and I'll play Boba.
Of course you will. who in this room, what man would not?
Russell's 3PO still.
Do I have to be 3PO every
No,
time?
I wasn't going to say he was 3PO. I was actually going to say that I think you would be Yoda in this.
Yay.
Not the prequel Yoda, but this Yoda.
John's character is
I think
back.
You have that chaotic energy of like, I'll take you to Yoda, but first, eat this soup. And just like...
You want some soup?
I think you have that chaotic energy.
John's character is back.
Emperor Palpatine.
Just a moment.
John would just be such a perfect emperor.
Yep.
Oh my gosh.
Who else could John play though? I mean, there's Chewie. There's always Chewie.
Oh, always Chewie.
Goodness. No, you know who Russell is? Oh gosh.
Yeah. Who is Russell?
Russell has big Lando energy.
He does. I was thinking it.
Oh, Lord.
Russell has big Lando energy.
So freaking weird.
I mean, it is true. You would be, like, the guy to, you know, get stuck in that situation, but then still end up, like, doing the right thing, or at least trying
yeah,
to.
Yeah, just be like, okay, fine, all right, okay.
Like, fine,
that's
I'll let you
deal.
Go.
I'll keep
like,
my city safe. What do you mean? You keep changing the deal. He's like, you better chill, or else it's going to be a worse one. Like, you're right. Good call.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. But I stick by Yoda, but you could also very well do Lando.
That's very flattering. I'm much happier with that choice. I was gonna say it, but I didn't want to be like, oh, I wanna be Lando.
I was thinking the whole time, but goodness. Yeah, it's hard Lando. Hard Lando.
Freaking Lando. I am just so in love with Lando Calrissian.
He's incredible. He's such a good character.
He's just so good.
He is, I think, in my opinion, the most underrated character of the original trilogy.
He's just so awesome.
Especially in episode 6, he plays a big part.
Mm-hmm.
He plays he is a main character in episode 6.
He's just such a good character.
Yeah.
And Billy Dee, what a freaking man.
Yeah,
so
Samuel leaned over to me right before Billy Dee came on screen and was like, okay, I want you to try to tell me who's more like handsome, Harrison Ford or Billy Dee? And then Billy Dee came on screen and I was like, I don't know that I can even answer that question.
It's Billy Dee.
Like,
it's Billy Dee, bro.
They're both
the real question
so
is Billy
crazy.
Dee or Donald Glover?
Billy Dee.
It's Donald Glover for me every time, but but that's
Dee.
Just me.
That man. I mean, even now in episode 8, like when he had that little scene, he was still amazing looking. It's like, come on, that's not fair.
I mean, he's just aged. Honestly, they've all aged really well.
Yeah.
Like, really, really well. Yeah. But yeah, so let's do favorite and least favorite moments from this one.
Someone's
What's
gonna say
least
it.
Favorite moment gonna be?
I don't know. How do you even pick one? I don't know.
I'm trying to think of one, if I have one.
If we all don't have one, I say we just X-nay the least favorite moment.
Well, give me a second. I might think of one.
Okay.
I will only... And again, you already know my stance on it. The only quote-unquote least favorite I can come up with is the moment before you realize that she's actually, like, into it, where he's just kind of moving in on her, and she's kind of like, shrinking a little bit. And then when you find out, obviously, she was, like, actually into it, that's like, okay, this is fine.
And but the moment 3PO rolls in.
It's 3PO with that amazing, just, like, ruining the
timing,
moment.
That timing.
It's so good.
So good.
But that moment is the only one where, for a second, I was like, eh. But then she was clearly, like, fine with it. And I was like, okay, so everything's good. But if, you know, if things had gone differently, that would have been my least favorite. But that's really the only one I can think of.
I don't have a least
favorite. Oh, and I guess her kissing Luke, because we know that they're siblings. I'd have to say that was my least favorite.
That works.
Yeah, that ending scene was a little...
But that's only because of post-knowledge, you know?
Well, yeah, and I think that's also okay if it's like, you know, because of this thing later, this thing is a little awkward.
I'm gonna say her kissing Luke at the end.
Because that, like, really awkward,
it's not even supposed to... It's not even supposed to be really, like, you know, anything. A thing in any way. But it's just still weird because we've now established her and Han's romance. And I know it's just like a, hey, like, get better.
It's like a comfort thing.
Like,
yeah.
It's a little weird for her to just be kissing Luke right after Han.
But also, it's not like her and Han are, like, I don't know.
Official.
They're what I would call, like, in the late phase of, like, quote-unquote courting or something. Where they're flirting a ton, they kiss, but they're not, like, a thing.
I agree with Samuel. That ending kiss, like, that ending kiss in particular was very, not needed, but it was just unnecessary, because not only do we have the established relationship between Han, or, like, that very clear foreshadowing of they're going to be an item later. At this point, we've also established there is a definitive connection between Luke and Leia to a certain degree through the Force. That at this point is, in my opinion, it was made clear it wasn't a sexual or romantic relation by the end of that movie. I just think it was unnecessary. Like, a kiss on the forehead would have made
yeah.
more sense.
Mm-hmm.
But kiss on the lip?
But also, one of those last shots was so brother-sister. Like, he went up and gave her, like, a side hug. And she's, like, also giving him a side hug. And I'm like, what is happening with these people? Like,
I honestly have absolutely no problem with that kiss at the end. Like, I more so have a problem with the kiss earlier.
Yeah.
Because that one feels very, like, disingenuous. Like, I'm just like, oh, I'm going to make you jealous. Mwah. Let me watch
right,
my kiss
your
best
friend. Right, but it also makes sense in the character.
Yeah. To me, that made sense from a character choice. Yeah. Which
but the, and it's a the, funny the, moment, because everybody knows that she is only doing it to piss off Han. Even Luke knows that. And Luke rolls with it. Luke is just like... That's right.
It was new face.
Like, the kiss at the end feels so, like, brotherly, like, sisterly. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, tons of brothers and sisters, like, kiss themselves on the mouth. Sorry, kiss each other on the mouth.
I don't know about tons, but...
It still makes me uncomfortable.
It is uncomfy.
I've definitely seen it happen.
So. I have too.
Yeah.
I've seen it happen more with, like, young children, though. Not, like, adults. I feel like it's weird when you're adults. When you're, like, a little kid, you don't really get the, like, the boundaries there. And it's like, oh, it's fine. But, like, once you get to a certain age, I feel like you start learning. But then again, of course, they don't know, and so it's fine. But, like, you know, it's just one of those things.
Anyway,
how about favorite moments?
My favorite moment was where Chewbacca almost just tried soloing a whole battalion of stormtroopers by himself.
And he was not doing a bad
job. No, he was not.
He was doing a good job.
He never blasted or nothing. He was just throwing stormtroopers around like
that. And Vader was just letting him do it. Vader was standing right there and was just like, all right.
I mean, if it gets extreme enough, he just like, okay.
Like if it had gotten extreme enough, he would have just like knocked him in too and been like, goodbye. But he was just kind of like, all right, like, we'll see what happens. No, I liked that.
That's a good moment. My favorite moment has to be the Battle of Hoth. Mm. It is just... The Snowspeeder is my favorite ship in the entire Star Wars series. I don't know what it is about it. There's something about it that I just find so, like, magical and, like, wonderful, like, just to look at. And, like, the fact that the Rebels designed the ships to take down AT-ATs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, what else would that cable do? Nothing. It would do nothing else. Nothing. Against, like, hyper-drive powered engines. Yeah. Like, oh, let me attach this cable. Oh, now I'm dead because they flew away. And so now I'm in space. You know, like, so I the Battle of Hoth is just, I hold in such high regard. It's my favorite, 100%.
Samuel?
It's got to be the duel.
I know. I knew someone was going
to
say it.
Yeah, it's got to be the duel and everything leading up to that.
Yeah.
And just... It is my favorite part of the original trilogy is the Luke and Vader stuff. It's why episode 6 is my favorite, is because the Luke and Vader stuff is just so incredible. Gosh, in episode 6. And this is just like a little taste of it. A little taste of what's to come in episode 6.
You see the throne room.
Just...
I am gonna cry.
We're gonna get there.
I'm going to cry.
We're gonna get there.
Danielle, your turn.
I mean, I have so many things I enjoyed that, like, were funny and were powerful. If I'm choosing, like, powerful, it was absolutely the duel, starting specifically from where Vader stops holding back.
Yeah.
Like, where he hops out and surprises him and, like, you know, kind of, like, throws him back. That, like, from there on is, like, sort of, what?
Keep going.
Okay. Is sort of, like, my favorite as far as dramatic, like, just really cool stuff. As far as funny stuff, it's definitely Yoda going, "Come on!" And then it cuts away and he's somehow 30 feet away but barely moving through the woods. And he's like, "Come on!" And going through, and it cracks me up.
It's because he used a force jump.
It's so funny. And then, of course, there's all 3PO's commentary on Chewbacca's back where he's like just commenting about like all the fighting going on and like just
turn
everything.
Turn me around, you buffoon.
It was so funny. It was killing me. But yeah, those would have to be my favorites.
So this fun fact here says that Boba Fett is never referred to by name in this movie. I could have sworn that people call him Fett.
No.
Nope.
Because I kept waiting. Y'all said it was Boba Fett, and I was like, oh, they're going to say it at some point. No.
All of the...
They mentioned Jabba and, like, going back and taking him there.
I could have sworn Lando called him Fett at one point.
I don't think so.
They definitely say it in the next
movie. Yeah, yeah.
Right, yeah.
Definitely in episode 6.
I don't believe that they say it in this, because I kept waiting for it. I was like, when are they going to address him?
Any of the bounty hunters' names?
Mm-mm.
None of them.
Hey, you should watch Book of Boba Fett.
Okay.
No, I had to write something down because you haven't watched it, and something made me have a question for Samuel, but it's from Book of Boba Fett, and it would be a spoiler, so I can't say it on the podcast.
Sorry.
So I'm going to have to ask you.
Close my ears.
No. Because I don't want to spoil it for anyone who hasn't watched it because it's so recent that okay. I'm like, yeah. Right. But I'll ask Samuel afterwards. All right. So out of, oh, good Lord, what do I want to do? Okay, I'm going to have to go with, out of 10 pieces of C-3PO, what would you rate this movie?
I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10.
This one's so good.
Yeah?
It's really good. I really, really like it.
Johnny boy?
I'd have to give it like a... I'll give it an 8.8 C-3PO pieces out of 10.
I think I'm going to drop a nice, clean, crisp 9.5 on this one.
Yeah.
Because I'm saving my 10.
I'm
saving my 10. It's
they
so close.
Actually blew up the AT-AT minis.
They actually exploded them?
Heck yeah. 8.9.
The Imperial AT-AT walkers were all animated through traditional go motion techniques, except for the scenes where they fall. These were filmed in real time on high speed cameras with precision timed pyrotechnic charges.
That's wow. So cool.
8.9.
Bold move, Cotton. 9.5. It still stands.
I think,
love it.
I think I'm going to ride the same train as Russell, honestly. Because, again, I want to save my 10, just like you. But I...
Gotta save that 10.
But I... It's so close to a 10.
No, it's
and,
so
but,
close.
And so I'm going to stick with you. I think I'm going to go 9.5. Because it's just like... It keeps you engaged the whole time. The pacing is so much better compared to A New Hope. There's so much like action and cool development and, you know, the whole training thing and then having to battle and, you know, essentially failing the battle because he can't beat Vader. And it's like, it's just so cool. I highly recommend just to everybody because it's a genuinely, objectively good movie.
Okay. I have one more fun fact.
Okay.
This is incredible. They were going to film the Hoth scenes in Norway. They went to Norway to film and then the blizzard happened.
Yeah.
That was really bad. It was so bad, they ended up shooting a bunch of the scenes with Han and Luke out in the snow in the hotel parking lot with the camera set inside the hotel so that all the crew could be out of the blizzard, filming out of the hotel's back door.
How?
Because it was so snowy.
The parking lot?
The weather conditions were so severe.
It was that snowy in the parking lot?
The crew put the camera in the back door of the hotel the cast and crew were staying at and shot from out the door 12 feet from the hotel out in the blizzard.
They cut open a tauntaun in the parking lot of a Marriott?
That is
in the parking lot of the
so incredible.
Yeah.
I love that so much.
The parking lot. This snowstorm was that bad. They're just like, I mean, I guess we'll just do it here. it's heavy enough. Because
it was stuff like that that was, you know, sort of destroying things. Another thing that ended up having them, you know, they had to spend money to find a new, like, venue was because they were supposed to shoot on a soundstage that currently The Shining was shooting on. But then the whole stage, like, caught fire. And so, like, they couldn't film there because everything had to get repaired.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. But unless y'all have any final thoughts.
I think that's it.
I mean, what else can you say? This movie's incredible. Watch it. Please watch it.
Yes. I honestly recommend this to just, like, anyone who likes a good movie.
I know. Even if you've seen it before, just watch it.
Watch it again.
Listening to us rant about it and rave about it is just gonna make you want to watch it, so just watch it.
So just go watch it. Yeah, so next week we're doing, because we took a break last week. We just have so much going on. We need a little break. So next week we'll be doing Fight Club.
Don't talk about it.
Which is Russell's request that we're gonna be silent for an hour.
We can't talk about Fight Club, so you're gonna have to sign a waiver before you watch. I'm just kidding.
We sign a waiver and then we just sit very quietly for an hour and no one says anything.
Speaking of twists, don't say a word, Samuel.
I mean, I don't know anything about it and I'm not gonna go looking for, because I like being surprised.
Good.
But just a reminder, you guys can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Mad Artists Entertainment and on Twitter at @artists_mad. We are really, really close to releasing our second episode of Cthulhu. I've, you know, gotten some of the tracks and we're just working on tweaking some very small things, so that should be out soon. You can visit our website for more information about all the projects that we both currently have going on and we are going to do in the future.
We have a new project we are very, very excited to announce. We are going to be doing a D&D live stream game called Call of the Netherdeep. With all of us around the table right now, existing as players, I'm the Dungeon Master, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Tyler will be present, as well as one of our other good friends, Benton. Our first episode will be airing on the 22nd of March, 1 week after the book comes out.
Mm-hmm.
So please join us for the first session. If you like D&D, if you like Critical Role, if you like watching a bunch of friends have a great time and laugh and call each other not too bad names, because we're not going to say bad things, but please join us. It's going to be an absolute blast, and I'm going to put my heart and soul into everything about it. So please, please come watch Call Another Deep. Twitch.tv. Twitch.tv/MadArtistsCo.
Yeah, Mad Artists Co. The same place that that Tyler always talks about for Forced Comedy.
Yes.
Same channel is where you can see that. And we'll also be uploading them to YouTube after the fact. So even if you're not able to, you know, if you're at work or you got stuff going on and you can't watch it live, you can definitely watch it later. But yeah, definitely check it out. We're going to have a ton of fun with it. And that's going to be going on for a good while.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can, if you have any comments, questions, corrections, or requests that you want us to review in the future, you can message our social media or email us at banterbox.madartists@gmail.com. Leave us a review wherever you're listening. It really helps us out. And we will see you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.